Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. I saw something in the news the other day that reminded me a lot of Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl book and movie that came out. What happened recently, Aaron?
Well, I know while we don't have an episode on this, this is a case that, I mean, pretty much everybody who follows crime in the news knows about. Sherry Papini. She was that mom from California who went missing, right? Was supposedly kidnapped, and then she turned up and, well, she was recently sentenced after pleading guilty, right?
Yeah.
She pleaded guilty to one count of lying to a federal officer and one count of mail fraud. Well, her sentence, 18 months in prison. What do you think about that?
Well, for people that don't know, what did she do?
She lied to the police, basically, right, about what had happened to her. She told them that she had been abducted and tortured by two armed Hispanic women. And she even worked with an FBI sketch artist. So you can see where the problem is here.
I never really got the motive really behind it all. But I don't know why they would bother wasting law enforcement's time with all of this. And to go all the way to the point of a sketch artist and having the FBI looking into this. It's just insanity to me. You know, I read Gone Girl back in the day, way before this. I'm wondering if this woman was inspired by the book for some weird reason. And I don't know what a proper punishment or sentence is for somebody that does something like this. I have no idea.
And it wasn't even just that she said two Hispanic women did this to her. She also benefited from it. What was it, like $128,000 in disability benefits that she received?
Yeah.
She got $30,000 in victim assistance. And then all the concern, right?
Yeah.
And then the waste of resources. These are resources that could have been spent somewhere else.
You know, I'm seeing, you know, 18 months in prison, but I think she should have had to pay it all back. And she might still have to do that.
Well, she does owe more than $300,000, according to what I've read.
And, it's going to be really hard for her to pay all that back if she's behind bars. So I don't know. Not that I'm saying she shouldn't go behind bars, just she might serve a better purpose working and paying back all the money of people's time and energy wasted on her BS.
Yeah, I don't know how much she could earn in the time if she didn't serve time behind bars. But, you know, sometimes I feel like a situation like this just causes the harm and there's really no way to set things right. There's too much damage done. But if anybody has any feedback, whether you think maybe, yeah, like Justin suggested, maybe she could have been out working, paying back what she owes, or whether you think having her owe the money and serve some time, if that was the better call.
So Aaron, tonight's case, it's a frustrating one. And there's this thing called swatting. If you don't know what it is, it's calling the police and reporting a fake crime going on, specifically one that is somebody is armed and dangerous, somebody is holding people captive in their home, somebody wishes to do harm upon themselves, something to that effect, to get the police to respond to a home or get a SWAT team to respond to a home using deadly force. That's essentially the whole intent, is to get somebody swatted by a SWAT team, somebody swatted by law enforcement. It's a disgusting behavior that people have caught on to over the years. And I think the case we're going to cover tonight was the one that kind of made the term swatting mainstream. So if you didn't know what it was before this case, you probably had heard it after this case. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
The December 28th, 2017 shooting of Andrew Finch by a police officer outside of his home in Wichita, Kansas.
As you said, it's December 28th, 2017. Andrew Finch is 28 and he's a father of two. His family says he's a very kind and helpful person. A lot of people loved him. When Andrew was just 11 years old, his aunt called his grandmother's house. And Andrew was staying at the house that night and answered. And the aunt said that she was drunk and needed a ride. So Andrew took his grandmother's car keys and drove to get his aunt. He was always a responsible kid and knew that somebody shouldn't be drinking and driving. He has three siblings, but his sister actually died in a car accident at age 20.
An 11-year-old driving a car.
Yeah, I know, but Wichita is actually a fairly big city, so I don't know. I mean, I know rural kids will drive farm trucks at 11 and 12 years old, no problem. But I don't think that was the case here. So I'm glad that nobody was hurt in that situation. He graduated high school in 2007. He studied AC repair, but decided to move on to other things. His main hobby was drawing. His mother always encouraged him to enroll in a computer graphics program, but instead he got roofing jobs and cement jobs, more kind of construction stuff. Age 20 is when he had his first child with his girlfriend. So he needed money.
Now, to get money, he started selling drugs, in particular meth. And it was in October 2012 when Andrew was heading to a drug deal, but he got pulled over and they found that he had the wrong registration for his car. But he wasn't about to wait for the police, so they ended up having to chase him and he crashed into a swimming pool. He served a year for that. And that's when he swore that he would no longer sell drugs. You know, it starts off that he needs money, so he tries to take this shortcut, and then he figures, well, I need to provide for my family, and this isn't going to cut it. He had another child in 2016, so he started working at Sonic and started tattooing his friends. But, you know, I think back to when he was going to work in AC repair, and that probably would have been a very good job. I've known people who've worked in heating and cooling, and it's a great career. But, you know, I think that's another thing that happens is as you go through life, you think, oh, I might do this, I might do that. And it sounds like he just never really settled down on anything.
So it's March of 2017, where Andrew and his mom moved into a rental house on West McCormick Street. It's near downtown Wichita. And they lived with Andrew's niece and two other roommates. Andrew apparently likes playing video games, and whether it's over Xbox Live or whatever streaming services there are out there. And that's when he comes across a specific person named Tyler Barris.
In December of 2017, Tyler Barris was using his online handle, which was SWAUTISTIC, Swatistic.
He has SWAT in his name. What a douche.
Having autistic in there, I mean, I'll just leave that be. This is his handle. Became a third party because there's this argument over a Call of Duty match and people would wager money. So it's a $1.50 wager here. And these players are threatening to SWAT each other. And one player, Talent with a 7 at the beginning, gave a fake address. That address was actually where Andrew Finch lived. Now, on December 28th, Barris was at the library when another gamer named Casey Viner, known as Bapperizer, contacted him.
10 days earlier, Casey had been swatted, and he wanted to get revenge on this other gamer, the Talent with a 7. So Viner and Talent were teammates in a 4v4 Call of Duty match, and they were playing for money. They lost their $1.50 wager, but Talent accidentally killed Viner during the game, and they got into a big argument, and that's when Viner contacted Barris to get revenge on this person.
Barris gets ticked off because he communicates with Gaskill, Talent, on Twitter, trying to get some information from him. And Gaskill contacts Barris and says, "Please try some shit. I'll be waiting," and gives him the address. "I'll have you in prison for 5 years, buddy. Casey already gave me all the proof I need. Bah, ha, ha, ha." So it's like a taunt, right? Well, Barris gets ticked off and says that he's going to SWAT Gaskill, this Talent guy, without charging Casey. We're just setting up how this all started. So this is, you know, Barris, he's living in LA. He called the Wichita police and he's reporting that he shot his father in the head, was holding his mom and sibling at gunpoint, and that he's at the following address, and gives the address.
But this isn't even the guy that Barris was having an argument with. Talent gave him a false address. So Barris is calling in this swatting call on Andrew Finch's address. Not even the same person that he was having a beef with online. Not that that matters, but it's not even the person he thinks it is. That's how stupid this whole situation is.
And at 6:10 p.m., Wichita City Hall got a call from someone who said that his mother hit his dad with a gun. So the employee at City Hall tried to transfer the call to 911, but the call dropped. The phone rang again at 6:15, and the transfer again failed. But this call ends up going through on the third time. 911, 911 answers the call at 6:18. The man on the phone gives his address and says, "I just shot my dad in the head because he was arguing with my mom and it was getting way out of control." And he said that he was pointing the gun at his mom and brother who were hiding in a closet, and he gave his name as Ryan. And then he said, "I didn't mean to kill my dad, but he's also thinking about setting the house on fire," and the line goes dead. So 911 now has an active situation, or so they think. Wichita police officers respond, and they get to the house at 6:24 p.m. Now, they're not told how the call came in, because the call actually went to City Hall, not 911. But they're responding here. 16 Wichita police officers and Sedgwick County Sheriff's deputies are there. And the person in charge is Sergeant Benjamin Jonker. He's the supervisor. So these officers surround the house.
But this doesn't give them any kind of pause that this wasn't a 911 call. They weren't told it wasn't a 911 call. They're just dispatching to a place. I would hope that in the future, if somebody calls City Hall that doesn't have a way to trace a call back, that maybe, just maybe, they would question the validity of the call.
Or call the house.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
So these officers have surrounded Andrew Finch's home, and two officers spot someone in the second story window bobbing up and down. So one officer says, "I think someone's performing CPR," and officers start moving toward the home. Three officers are across the street. Now, they had wanted to use a PA system to speak to whoever was in the house, but the door opened before they could use that PA system.
Andrew was at home. He was actually sitting on his couch, and his 17-year-old niece and their other, you know, roommates were all home. Andrew hears a noise outside and he goes to look out the window, but he couldn't see anything. So he opens the door and is greeted by these police officers shouting at him to raise his hands. Now, if you watch the video of this, he's standing on his front porch. These police officers are hiding behind vehicles across the street from him. I would say it's a good 40 yards or 40 meters from where the police officers are to Andrew's front door. It's wintertime. It's December. It's already dark out at, you know, 6:30. It is dark. The sun is down. So all we have is streetlights illuminating this area.
Andrew, hearing all this noise, the shouts, raises his hands, but then apparently he moved one of his arms, his hand, toward his waist, and that got Officer Justin Rapp, who was across the street with a rifle, nervous, and he fired a shot, and it hit the edge of the screen door and then went through Andrew's chest. Andrew fell back into the house. Police entered the home soon after.
I watched this video from all of the different angles, Aaron. Can you just imagine you're at home, you're a law-abiding citizen, you're not doing anything wrong, you hear a commotion outside, you hear something going on, you walk out onto your porch of the home that you're supposed to be at, that you're legally allowed to be at, and then you have a bunch of police officers or people, you might not even been able to tell who they were, screaming at you. He raises his hands and he's getting multiple commands from different people yelled at him from, again, 40 meters away. And somehow these police officers think they see him going for a gun. It's dark and it's 40 meters away. In fact, they don't even actually say in a lot of the reports that they saw a gun. They say that it appeared he was going for his gun. They just assume.
Well, I think what this is, Justin, is if his hand is up and then it moves down toward his waist, they don't have to see a gun. It's a threatening move to them.
Yeah. Police can use deadly force for any deadly, you know, anytime they feel there's a threat, real or otherwise. We've said this before on episodes. Police can shoot you if they perceive there's a threat. Perceive. There doesn't even have to be one. I just look at this situation and I just think Andrew is a good, you know, 40 meters, 40 yards away from these cops. Even if he had a handgun, a little pistol, its effective range is no more than 25 meters. These police officers are well outside of any effective range. It's not that a bullet can't travel and hit somebody, but I would just think give the guy a second to see if he actually has a gun or not, because he's not going to hit anything from 40 meters away on his front porch, firing into the darkness at police officers that are strategically placed behind cars and other houses. I'm just saying.
Well, I honestly don't know what an effective range of a pistol is, but if I look it up, it says that it's not really reliable beyond 50 yards.
Well, all the indoor ranges only go to 25 yards. So most people don't train beyond 25 yards at all.
Right. Well, I guess the main point here is whatever the effective range is, the officers were pretty far out from him and they had him surrounded. They shot him. He goes down and then they proceed to move into the home and they handcuff the three other people there and take him out. And of course, when they look around, they can't find a gun on Andrew, near Andrew, or even in the home. Now we have the shooting of an unarmed man.
An unarmed man who wasn't even the quote-unquote intended target of the SWAT call. This is just some random guy. He had no idea what was going on. And Andrew is now dead because of this SWATting call. They keep referring to it as a prank in all of these articles that I've read. But this isn't a prank. This is a call intending harm. This is a call intending the police to show up and kill you. I'm not going to mince words. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You want the police to show up and kill your target, your victim.
It's a deadly situation that they've created.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Andrew's mother, Lisa, she tells the officers that Andrew heard a noise, went to the door, screamed, and was shot. She said that she didn't hear the police identify themselves. They did not knock on the door. And she says that Andrew didn't receive any warnings before he was shot. And if you watch the video, yeah, she's right. They didn't say, if you do that, you're going to get shot. They just shot him because they perceived a threat. So what does the deputy police chief have to say about this, Aaron?
Well, according to Deputy Police Chief Troy Livingston, he said that Andrew was given several commands to put his hands up and that he moved his hands toward his waist multiple times, which is what triggered, pardon the pun, Officer Rapp to believe he was reaching for a weapon.
He was given several commands. It's hard to tell or hear what those commands are because the video is, people are yelling over each other. And there wasn't enough time to pass between Andrew walking out that door and the shot ringing out for him to reach to his waistband multiple times. Like, it was pretty much once from all the video I've watched, because unless he walked out with his hands down his waistband, there's not multiples here. It's not. And again, Andrew wasn't doing anything wrong. So he's being told to put your hands up. For all Andrew knows, they're talking to somebody else, not even him.
That was one of the things that I thought when I first was reading about this case is, why would he think it was about him?
Yeah.
He wasn't doing anything that would invite the police to his home like that. So he was probably confused. It also bothers me, you've brought it up multiple times, but it needs to be said again, there were multiple commands being given to him. And this is where I feel like if you're going to communicate with somebody, there should have been someone who was told, okay, you're the one that's going to communicate with them. That's not what happened. And when you have multiple people shouting out, I just think it's very confusing.
Just watching the video and knowing all of it, hindsight's 20/20, but if the cops surrounded my house and were posted up all around with their guns out and told me to come outside, I wouldn't, because I personally don't think there'd be any way to survive that scenario. I think you would be better off hiding in your house under a bed and just waiting for them to come in and find you. I don't know how this plays out any different, because Andrew was obviously confused and didn't know what was going on. And I don't see how he was going to live through this. But what happens while the police are inside Andrew's home, searching it and handcuffing his family?
While they're in the home, Tyler Barris called back to City Hall and he asked to be connected to 911. He had more to say. He said, "I shot my dad with a black handgun and he was forcing his mom and brother to stay in the closet." And then he said that the house was one story and they had poured gasoline in the house and might set it on fire. So this information gets relayed to the police who are over at the Finch house. They're in a two-story house. It does not smell like gasoline. They did not find any weapons there. And that's when they realized this was probably a false report.
Yeah.
Because it's not making any sense, right? So at 7:50 p.m., Shane Gaskill messages Tyler Barris and said, "This shit has me dying. They showed up to my old house."
Yeah.
Now, there's your connection, because Andrew Finch, he doesn't know Shane Gaskill. He doesn't know Tyler Barris. He doesn't know the people who were gaming, right? But Shane, he used to live at the address, but had been evicted from that address. That's why he knew it. And Tyler responded, "You gave an address that you don't live at, but you were acting tough, LOL. So then Shane tells Barris, "You should delete the tweet you posted on your Twitter account, because you had posted a screenshot of the DMs where Gaskill sent the address." But Barris refused to do that.
Barris has doxed him and called the police to his house. He's now been informed that that's not even the right house, but he's doubling down on his stupidity.
And Shane reaches back out at 9:51 p.m. And this time he says, "Me, you, and Bape need to delete everything. This is a murder case now." So Tyler, with this information, decides to tweet, "That kid's house I swatted is on the news." So then Twitter users begin tweeting back at him, and obviously people are upset. But he responds, "I didn't get anyone killed because I didn't discharge a weapon, and being a SWAT member isn't my profession." In other words, I made some calls, but I didn't pull the trigger, so it's not my problem.
And thank God he is so stupid to tweet this publicly out there. Otherwise, it might have been pretty hard to trace it back to him.
So Andrew Finch died shortly after the shooting at the hospital. He was pronounced dead. And Officer Rapp was placed on administrative paid leave after the shooting. I mean, without getting too deep into what Officer Rapp did, it's like at this point, Tyler Barris is the one who set this all in motion. Because without his calls, Officer Rapp wouldn't have been there with a scope and a rifle.
Exactly.
At least, you know, when I was digging into this, Justin, that was the first thing I thought of was, my God, I mean, without Tyler Barris, this doesn't happen. But because of his actions, you have officers showing up with a belief in their heads that someone has been killed and more people are in danger and they need to do something. Now, we can talk about how they handled that situation. We'll get into that. But at the very core of this, this is Tyler Barris's doing.
Tyler Barris has a long history of doing stuff like this. This is why his username, his handle, has SWAT in it.
His handle, the only capital letters in his handle are SWAT. There's a reason for that.
He thinks this is funny, and people refer to him as a serial swatter.
Now, the FBI actually got involved here, and they assisted the police departments in Wichita and Los Angeles in locating Tyler Barris. They located him on December 29, 2017. He was arrested for making the false report in Wichita that resulted in the death of Andrew Finch.
And at that point, they're looking at his history. All the times he's been charged with things, his pretty much his rap sheet. And how many times is this guy engaging in swatting? I have like two pages here, Aaron. Like, we need to go through this.
I believe this is something that he was engaging in because, one, he got a thrill out of it. Two, he was making money off of it. And three, he was never held accountable. He was getting away with it.
That's why I think he was, you know, nobody was taking this seriously. Somebody had to die. It's a really disgusting state of affairs here. But between 2015 and 2017, he had made false calls in Ohio, Nevada, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Texas, Arizona, Massachusetts, Missouri, Maine, Pennsylvania, New Mexico, Indiana, Michigan, Florida, Connecticut, and New York. I don't know what states he wasn't active in. I think the list might have been shorter. He played Halo. So in 2015, he was actually swatted by somebody else. And Tyler says that he remembers hearing the helicopter hovering over his house before he realized that it had to be a police chopper. And he thought, how cool would it be if I could do that to anyone I wanted? He says it was just appealing to him.
It made him feel powerful. And he even bragged to his grandmother about it, calling himself a hacking god. Now, he lived with his grandmother, Wendy Gregory. She's the woman who raised him.
And if she knew he was doing this, either A, she didn't understand the caliber of the situation, or B, he wasn't exactly giving her the full story. But he had called in a bomb threat to the Glendale Police Department in September of 2015. He said there was bombs inside of the ABC studios in Glendale. I mean, this isn't even somebody he's playing Call of Duty against or anything. This is just him being a jackass, calling up and reporting false stuff.
Well, they tried to trace the call, but it was a spoofed IP address.
And then he called back in October again, claiming there were bombs inside ABC studios. Cops and the bomb squad are sent out. They don't find anything, but they couldn't identify the caller until Wendy Gregory called into a Northridge police officer and said it was her 22-year-old grandson who was the one making these bomb threats. And she gave his name, Tyler Barris. So this Northridge police officer was able to get in a call to the Glendale department, and they were able to figure out who this person was.
Yeah, she was watching the news, and Tyler had asked her, do you think I can clear out that building if I wanted to? Because the ABC studios was on TV, right? And well, when she found out about the bomb threat, she went back to Tyler and said, did you do this? And he said, yeah, I did. But he threatened her. He threatened to beat her face into a bloody mess and then blow up their house if she ratted him out. And she was worried that he would do it. But she had a friend who was an officer, and she ended up contacting him.
So the LAPD will show up at Tyler's house, search the home, and they found his iPhone with over 40,000 messages on it, containing evidence that he was responsible for the bomb threats across the country. And he had multiple Twitter accounts using gamer nicknames, you know, all having vague associations to swatting people. He targeted his gamer friends, high schools, and colleges, you know. And if his friends were like, I don't want to go to school today, he'd be like, no problem, I'll get you out of school. And he would call that high school or college up, calling a bomb threat.
And of course, he brags about these on Twitter.
Yeah, like an idiot, but I'm glad he's an idiot.
October 15, 2015, he'd been charged with two felony counts of false report of a bomb to agency or business, one felony count of criminal threat, and a misdemeanor for dissuading a witness from reporting a crime because he threatened his grandmother. His bail was set at $1 million. Now, he pleaded no contest to two counts of making a false bomb report, and he was sentenced to 2 years and 8 months, got credit for time served and good behavior, and he was released on January 20th, 2017.
And he went right back to his old ways. He was arrested for illegally entering his grandmother's house because obviously she took a protection order out against him because she didn't want him anywhere near her. And again, he was sentenced, but he pleaded no contest. He got a year behind bars, but he didn't get a year because, you know, they released him early in August of 2017.
Yeah, he went to a homeless shelter after that. And that's why he ended up going to the library. To do what else, right? Make more false reports.
Yeah.
There were more bomb reports after he got out. Again, this is just to tell you, to show you his behavior, his pattern. This isn't like he did it one time and then was like, oops, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. No, he got a thrill out of this. And I would encourage any of you that are curious about his patterns, his behavior, his history, go read about it. There's a lot more here, but it's just, we could spend a while talking about all the threats that he made.
And he even would go after like the FCC big government organization here, and they were discussing a vote for net neutrality, something you would think he would probably support, but whatever. He calls on a bomb threat. And I would just assume, Aaron, that if the FCC is getting bomb threats, they would have the means to trace this call back. They would have the means to track this person down pretty quick.
Well, either way, we're talking at least 24 fake bomb threats in California, and of course, many other threats and hoaxes across the country. At this point, I think you understand the gravity of the situation.
And of course, he's living out of a shelter. He needs money. So he starts charging people $10 to $15 if they want to hire him to call in a bomb threat or to SWAT somebody. And it's said that he made over $700. And now we have one of these calls finally ending in the loss of life, just like he really intended from the get-go. And the reason why I make a point to say that is because, you know, you don't make a false call talking about somebody who's murdered somebody or, you know, holding people captive unless you want the police to show up in force. And it's really sad because there are Facebook groups and groups out on Twitter, even in the podcast community, that try to pull this stuff. And it's really disgusting to me because I know that they truly intend to cause harm to others. And it's a real toxic environment for some people.
So Barris was arrested at the public library in Los Angeles, and the Finch family, by way of their attorney, Kurt Kearns, released a statement on December 30th. And this is what they said. While the family is pleased an alleged swatter was detained, the swatter did not shoot an unarmed man stepping out onto his porch. That was a WPD officer. While the WPD has attempted to deflect the cause of death to a phone call, Andrew was killed by a bullet fired by an officer who clearly had no cause to fire. Prank or no prank, no officer claimed to have seen a weapon before firing, and that fact alone makes this shooting reckless at best. The family remains hopeful that all responsible are brought to justice, including the shooter. Right there, Justin, it seems like the family is kind of acknowledging that the swatter has responsibility, but they really feel like this came down to someone pulling a trigger.
Well, they're expecting the police to, you know, look at how the call came in, how it couldn't be traced back, how the caller said that there was a hostage situation. So, you know, they're expecting the police to try to make contact, maybe call the house. But this all happened so fast. It's unclear if the police had a chance or not, but they obviously don't feel the shooting was justified, because when a man who's at his home, completely law-abiding citizen, not breaking the law, can walk out onto his front porch and be shot by police officers, the family just doesn't think that's right.
Well, we had talked before when discussing the Pettit family case that, you know, officers can believe they're dealing with a hostage situation, but if they don't handle it like one, it's kind of weird. And we do understand that these officers were supposed to use a PA system, but I don't understand why they can't just call the house. It feels like they were treating this as a real situation and that they didn't have time to get all of the information they needed because time was of the essence.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying they didn't do wrong here. I'm just still thinking about Tyler Barris and how he set this up. I mean, he made it sound like someone was already dead and two more lives were in danger. And possibly the house was going to be burned up. So, yeah, I think it's a little more complicated, but we'll continue.
Yeah.
So, of course, then you have the public joining in and criticizing the police because they're saying, you let Barris get away with this for so long, right? I mean, they had him in custody before. And then he's just released back into the public. I mean, this case is a mess, Justin. It's just a mess.
And you would think that somebody who has been arrested and charged with this, usually when you're let out, you have some sort of monitoring. You know, a probation officer is tracking you, something to make sure that you're not doing this. And I'm sure they said that, you know, you can't engage in games or stuff anymore, but they didn't have any means of going to a public library and preventing him from doing this. Well, They do have means to do that. They just chose not to. That's why this behavior continued. And this is why he was able to get away with it until somebody died. But it's January 3rd, 2018. Los Angeles County DA filed a fugitive from justice warrant against Barris because he was charged with a felony in Kansas. And at a bond hearing in LA, Barris confirmed that he was the man wanted by the Kansas court systems. So this is, you know, kind of an interesting thing. They file a fugitive from justice warrant, but Barris, they know where he's at, and he's waiving any right to extradition because Barris still in his head thinks he hasn't done anything wrong because he didn't pull the trigger, and they're going to send him off to Kansas.
Well, basically what happens from here, Tyler Barris is in the news, and many people come out of the woodworks, right, saying, oh, I know who this is. This is the person that did this. This is the person that did that. He's now being named as the person who did all these bomb threats.
And again, it's a lot of these police departments are not talking to each other. So they all have their isolated case, but now they're able to start connecting the dots on how many things, how many calls he's actually made across the country.
And this gets crazy because there are charges and warrants being issued against Tyler Barris from all over the place, even in Canada. But anyway, there's a 7-page affidavit unsealed on January 26th of 2018. And that's when people find out the details of how this went down, how Barris ended up swatting Andrew Finch's home.
And they go through the Casey Viner, who got into this heated argument and then threatened to swat Gaskill. And that's when he gave that address, you know, where he used to live. And that's what Barris used when he called in. And now Casey Viner is suspected in several swatting incidents self.
Now, according to the media, people in Wichita, they were really upset over the shooting. And there were flyers posted around the city stating, arrest WPD officer Justin Rapp. And there were also t-shirts made. And Andrew Finch's family rented 4 billboards that said, Andy Finch is dead. If you believe in justice, it's time to file charges.
Their family members are dead. All for nothing. I mean, we can look at this situation and say, yeah, the police had the wrong information. The police were going at this as if it was a murder and hostage situation, and that's how they're going to respond to that. But how is Andrew supposed to respond to police who think there's a hostage situation going on when Andrew is just chilling at his house?
He has no idea why they've shown up. Again, I think he was very confused. Hindsight's 20/20. You could say, oh, he should have just laid down. But I mean, he has no idea what's happening.
He wasn't even coming outside because they commanded him. He was coming outside because he heard something going on. He thought that maybe somebody was breaking into a car. He thought maybe one of his neighbors had the police called on him. He didn't even know what was going on. And then he's dead within a minute of walking out his front door.
In February of 2018, Kansas passed the Andrew T. Finch Act. This is because swatting, well, the penalties weren't that high for that. So they increased those penalties, which included a maximum sentence of 41 years in prison. That was made law on April 12, 2018.
I mean, if you can get away with it the way Barris has, then obviously the repercussions, the punishment isn't enough.
You know, I think about Tyler Barris and his comments, his statements, whatever, and I compare them to what Andrew Finch's family has said. And I feel like they're trying to say that everyone who's involved in the death of Andrew Finch should pay. But Tyler Barris continues to believe that he's just showing off how much of an EGOT he is, and that because he didn't actually pull a trigger, that he's not the one that should pay for what happened. Because he used a computer in jail and started tweeting. And one of the things he said was, how am I on the internet if I'm in jail? Because I'm an EGOT, that's how. All right, now who is talking shit? Your ass is about to get swatted.
He's literally trying to swat people from jail.
Or threatening to swat people. Again, this is someone who does not get it. they are having fun with the situation, and yet someone has died because of their actions.
And it's just like anyone who has called in a swatting call or encouraged anyone to call in. It's because they truly don't feel any connection here. They don't feel any responsibility. And how he has access to a computer behind bars is just mind-boggling to me. Of all the people, he's the one that should be cut off.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. But the district attorney, Mark Bennett, tackles this head on and responds to the calls for Justin Rapp to be charged. And he says that he will not prosecute the officer. He says to charge Rapp would require evidence, not 20/20 hindsight, that it was unreasonable for him to believe in that moment the man who came to the door posed a risk to the officers near the house. There is insufficient evidence to overcome self-defense immunity under Kansas law.
Which, what if the police had come through the door or were on his property and Andrew did have a gun and wanted to defend his own property against intruders? It's all stacked in law enforcement's favor here. They can shoot you if they perceive a threat. And this is a clear example of a police officer shooting somebody with a rifle from across the street who felt threatened.
Now, Andrew's mother, Lisa, she got with an attorney named Andrew Stroth out of Chicago, and together they wrote a complaint and they filed a civil rights suit against the city. Tyler Barris had a preliminary hearing on May 22nd of 2018, and Officer Rapp ended up testifying that the SWAT had not arrived at the scene yet. He thought he was dealing with a homicide and hostage situation. He was worried that the person who answered the door would shoot at them. Now, he said he did not see a weapon in Andrew's hand, but he thought he was reaching for a gun, so he shot him to protect the other police officers. But the district attorney, Mark Bennett, he had a 42-page report on this incident, and in that report, he said that Rapp, officer number one, stated, "I believe that I see a gun in his hand."
And so right there, when you have contradictions between statements made the night of and statements made later, that's going to give a lot of fuel to the fire for this family to go after the city and the police force and file a lawsuit.
Rapp was asked, "Have you ever heard of swatting before?" And he said that he had never heard of this before now, essentially, that this was new to him. I'm not surprised by this. Are you?
I am, because I thought that police departments were supposed to keep up on the latest scams, the latest crimes. And I guess unless you have responded to a fake swatting call, then your department might not know about this.
Or individual officers may not know about it if they haven't been dealing with it.
Yeah, but I would just assume that the chief of police or captains should keep, a finger on the pulse of what's going on in the world and give updates every, during their roll call in the morning. But I expect a lot out of the world, and that's why I'm always disappointed.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/genY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/genY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/genY.
May 22nd, 2018, a federal grand jury in Kansas handed out indictments against Barris, Viner, and Gaskill for wire fraud, and Barris was also indicted for cyberstalking. So now the other guys are being pulled in too.
Yeah, they were kind of accessories to this, but the charges they're getting hit with are slaps on the wrist, I think.
So May 23rd, 2018, an indictment was unsealed. charged Gasco with one count of obstruction of justice, one count of conspiracy to obstruct justice, and one count of wire fraud. See, Gasco's co-defendant, Casey Viner, asked Tyler Barris to make a false call. And after that, Gasco sent two more messages to him. Do you want to try again? So they're showing here how he egged this situation on. So when Gasco was questioned about the messages that he had been sending to Barris, he told the officer it was one of his old IP addresses he was using, but that's not true because he was actually using the IP address of another resident in Kansas. So these guys are trying to be tricky, but it's not working because this is an investigation. May 24th, federal prosecutors charged Barris with the bomb threat to the FCC and the FBI in December of 2017. Justin, when I read that, I think, wow, if it wasn't heavy around it before, it is now.
Yeah. And now they're finally taking this guy seriously and hitting him with all the charges and all of the things that they should have been from the beginning before somebody had to lose their life.
Now, Andrew Finch had a brother named Jerome, and he reached out to Tyler Barris. I guess he wanted to know why this happened. And Barris's response to him was, I cannot say that I don't feel a level of guilt for what happened to your brother. A kid on Twitter was claiming to live at that address and was begging to be swatted. I mean, begging. I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd want to read that from Tyler if I was the brother of Andrew Finch.
No. Again, it just shows how brazen and callous he is and saying, this guy was begging for me to swat him and have him killed. But, sorry, it was your brother that ended up getting killed. It's so disgusting.
Now, a lot was settled on November 13th of 2018 when Tyler Barris pleaded guilty to 51 federal charges, which handled federal cases that were filed in Kansas, California, and Washington, D.C. And then he had 9 charges dropped in Kansas, which left him with 3 that he pled guilty to: false information and hoaxes, cyber stalking, and conspiracy. He also pled guilty to 2 charges in D.C., threatening to kill another or damage property by fire. And he made bomb threats against the FCC on December 14th and the FBI headquarters on December 22nd. So 46 counts of swattings while living in LA and using credit and debit cards to purchase things without permission. And in addition, he also informed investigators in California about 16 more calls that they didn't even know about.
We started the episode out about the woman who hoaxed her own kidnapping, her own abduction, and whether 18 months was enough for her. No matter what these people are sentenced to, I don't think it's enough. I have zero sympathy for any of the people involved with this.
So yeah, I don't know. How do you sentence someone like this, Justin? Obviously, they haven't been able to keep him off the internet, off the phones, and yet he's been causing so much damage. Well, the U.S. attorney, Stephen McAllister, said he was going to recommend a 20-year sentence if Barris would write apology letters to the police, dispatchers, and the Finch family. But if he didn't comply with that, he was going to get a much longer sentence. I don't even know why he's saying this, because I think an apology from this guy is basically useless.
Same. I think that this guy is a repeat offender. And if it was a one-time deal that just went terribly wrong, sure, maybe give him another chance. But this guy, this is what he does. And it doesn't matter to me if you're a serial rapist or serial murderer or whatever it is. If you're doing it over and over and over again, well, maybe you should be removed from society, because what this guy is doing is extremely dangerous. It's not only putting people's lives in danger, but it's also putting the police officers' lives in danger too. Because what if one of these people pulls out a gun and shoots the cops? I mean, what he's doing is, it's gone on for too long. And if he got a life sentence, I don't think I would care. I'm like, well, you made your bed, lie in it, man, because this is the only way they're going to get you to stop doing what you're doing.
Barris was sentenced March 29th, 2019. He got 20 years in federal prison. This included 150 months for Kansas, 90 months for California, and 5 years for Washington, D.C. Now, April 12th, 2019, Casey Viner pleaded guilty to conspiracy and obstruction of justice in federal court. And the United States Attorney for the District of Kansas recommended that he not serve any jail time. But prosecutors recommended 2 years of probation, home confinement, pursuing advanced education, steady employment, and no gaming for 2 years.
See, I had a friend who got into an altercation at a party and threatened somebody. They charged him with making a terroristic threat. This was just a verbal threat when a bunch of drunk people were yelling at each other, by the way. And the people he was threatening weren't even in the house. So it's even more ridiculous. He got a 10-year sentence, suspended 10 years probation for a drunken argument at a party. And you're going to tell me that this guy, these swatters, are getting as lenient of a sentence as 2 years probation? Like, very disappointing.
Well, May 24, 2019, Shane Gaskell's attorney and federal prosecutors, they filed a joint motion. They were requesting a deferred prosecution. Gaskell was charged with conspiracy, obstruction of justice, wire fraud, and making a false statement during investigation. The pretrial diversion agreement stated that the government agreed not to pursue prosecution for 18 months, and Gaskell agreed to waive speedy trial defenses and pay $1,000 in restitution and fees. Now, Justin, you may not like the way the sentences are coming down, but remember, there are multiple charges all over the place. We'll see where they end up. Because Casey Viner, well, September 13th, 2019, he was sentenced to 15 months in prison. He was also restricted from gaming for 2 years. This restriction from gaming for 2 years, is that like the worst punishment ever for these guys because they love gaming so much? Is this where the justice is coming in?
Why not restrict them from gaming ever again? I mean, I don't even know why this is a thing. And how do they even enforce that? I mean, it seems like it's more of a seatbelt ticket. Like if they were to get caught gaming, then they would be in violation. But how do you restrict someone from gaming? How do you enforce that?
Shane Gaskell, he violated his probation. And in September of 2021, federal prosecutors said, okay, well, we're going to resume prosecution against you now.
It's weird. It's just a weird thing.
Yeah. Well, as we said much earlier, the Finch family had filed a lawsuit. This lawsuit against Officer Rapp was for excessive force. And they also filed a lawsuit against Sergeant Jonker for supervisory liability. And they filed a lawsuit against Wichita for municipal liability. Now, they are seeking compensatory and punitive damages based on the actions of these officers, lack of action by the sergeant. They were seeking more than $25 million. So the trial was set for September 29th, 2020. You kind of started this talking about how these commands were being shouted out almost like at random, I think, right?
Yeah.
There was really no way for this person to understand what was going on. And the lawsuit lays that out. It says that the sergeant, Sergeant Jonker, did not take steps to ensure that the officers identified themselves and the officers were not visually recognizable as police, and that Jonker failed to designate a primary point of contact responsible for communicating with any civilian who might come outside. Again, that's something I brought up. I don't understand how you have all these people randomly shouting commands. There should be one person speaking so that they can at least attempt communication here, because otherwise it's just a bunch of yelling.
That's what I hear when I watch the video. Everyone's yelling. How is a person supposed to comply, especially if they're contradictory commands?
They also talk about in this lawsuit that Jonker failed to conduct a preliminary exam to assess the threat, that he failed to call on SWAT and the crisis intervention team. SWAT would know better how to handle this situation, I would bet, right? There's special weapons and tactics.
If we're going with this is a homicide and hostage situation, then yes, they would.
There were no de-escalation techniques used here. They talk about how Rapp and Jonker were across the street 40 yards from the house, and Rapp could not see the officers who were standing right outside the house and in a better position to evaluate the threat. Now, you know, obviously it's dark, so I don't know how well that scope was working for him, but if you watch the video, there are officers who have a better view of Andrew Finch, but none of the officers close to the house fired their weapons. Only Officer Rapp did.
So the ones that were closer and had a better vantage point didn't perceive a threat. I mean, this is why the family is filing a lawsuit, because it doesn't make sense to them.
Yeah. Since there was no communication here, good communication, you know, even on top of that, the communication that was happening, No one actually informed Andrew Finch that his life was in danger if he didn't comply. I really wonder whether he even knew what was going on. So Justin, the officer, believed that it was possible that Andrew was turning to go back into his house because he was scared. And other officers have agreed with this. And Andrew Finch, after being shot, no one assisted him for 15 minutes. They handcuffed him and left him laying on the floor.
They let him bleed out.
So this officer, Officer Rapp, he returned to active duty 10 months after shooting Andrew Finch, and he was eventually promoted to detective. And October 24, 2019, this officer filed a lawsuit against the city of Wichita claiming breach of contract because he was kept on restricted duty after he was cleared of wrongdoing and after receiving two medical clearances. And he said the city also didn't allow him to work part-time as a security officer for months after the shooting, which caused him to lose, by his estimation, more than $30,000. So he wanted that plus interest. So the district court, the U.S. District Court in Wichita, their response seemed to indicate that they think a jury could find that Andrew Finch was unarmed and unthreatening. So they basically rejected his arguments here. But, you know, the Finch family and Officer Rapp were both appealing to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, and they did not find in Officer Rapp's favor. Well, and I like how the appeals court, they actually ruled that Andrew Finch had not committed any crimes and had no way of knowing why police were surrounding his house.
Do we not have the right to feel secure in our own homes? And this is kind of the question surrounding this whole case of the shooting of Andrew Finch.
So I guess, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this case finishes, Justin. But as far as I can tell, it seems like the courts really don't believe that Officer Rapp has much of an argument here. But they also don't believe that the Finch family has any real course of action against the city of Wichita, because according to them, they say the lawsuit from the Finch family has failed to show any deliberately indifferent policies or customs that caused Rapp to use excessive lethal force.
Meaning no wrongdoing. You can't prove that he was acting outside of how they're trained, their police department's policy. This is typical of most police shootings that go wrong. There's a civil lawsuit filed because the surviving family members feel there's something wrong here, and they see that the police officer is not being criminally charged, so they're going to go for a civil suit. And police officers have qualified immunity. They have a lot of things that protect them. They have police unions. They have insurance companies. Usually when you are filing civil suits, it's not really against the police officer. But in this case, they're naming him now, right?
But I think what they're saying, though, is that this can basically be put on Officer Rapp. So the family can deal with him in court, but they can't really deal with the city.
And I don't know if they'll win or not. We'll see how that plays out. So, Aaron, I have a few questions, and I don't need you or anyone to answer them. I just want people to think about these questions in their own mind and come up with their own views. But what does it say about our society that we could intentionally call the police with the intent of them killing a person? I don't want anyone to think that swatting is a funny prank, because it's definitely intended to target a victim, waste cops' time, and put everyone's lives in danger. Secondly, if the police officer is completely cleared in this case and there's no wrongdoing, meaning the shooting was justified, should Tyler Barris be charged with anything beyond what he's being charged with? Because you can't exactly charge him with felony murder or manslaughter or any of those things because the shooting was justified. Does that make sense? It's if the police officer acted in the wrong, then you could say, well, Tyler Barris put this in motion. But if the police officer's shooting was justified, then can you put it a manslaughter charge on Tyler? Just a question that I'm wanting people to think about. I don't want anyone to send us an angry email saying, well, no, this is the way. It's just, I want you to think about that, because this is the way the court systems and the attorneys are thinking about it. And lastly, can a law-abiding citizen feel secure in their own home if they've committed no crime? I mean, does it all it takes is just one phone call, one allegation of guilt, which could justify the use of deadly force against you. This really shows that you're not innocent until proven guilty. This really does show that we don't really have freedom. If you can call the police and have them show up at somebody's house with zero evidence, just one phone call and one allegation, are we truly free? Are we truly innocent until proven guilty? Just ask yourself if we are. It's just, these are some of the thoughts I had while reading through this case, and it made me really question if we are truly free.
Well, the one thought I have is there were, 16 officers on scene?
Mm-hmm.
Only one officer shot Andrew Finch, who was unarmed.
Yeah.
And then you have the problem of, he said that he thought he saw a gun, but then later he claims that Andrew moved his hand toward his waist multiple times or something. No other officer actually pulled the trigger. So he had one person making the decision. And again, it's like, when I go through this whole case, I understand why the family feels the way they do about Officer Rapp. I'm wondering why everyone else is making the decisions they make, even more so than what Officer Rapp did, because he was promoted later.
Yeah.
He was promoted. I guess people are saying you can make a mistake and it won't be held against you forever.
You know, on a lot of the YouTube videos and comment sections about this case, you'll find a lot of ex-military, you know, members of the military and ex-military saying, when I was over in Afghanistan or Iraq, like, we're not allowed to shoot somebody if we perceive a threat. In fact, most of the time we have to be fired upon before we can return fire. Now, given if somebody pulls a gun out and is going to aim it at you, I think you do have the right, and I think police do have the right to use deadly force. But it's this whole perceived threat business that people really have a problem with, especially people in the military, because they literally will comment, if I did this over in Afghanistan, I would be in jail right now for murder. Yet somehow in America, we allow a perceived threat to justify the use of deadly force. Comparing the two is a little eye-opening for some people.
I don't feel comfortable with the way this has ended up either. I feel like this is proof that sometimes there just really isn't justice, you know? But again, the person who I feel has the most on their shoulders with this is Tyler Barris, because he's the one that did this again and again and again, and it finally resulted in death, and he still hasn't apparently learned his lesson. If you listen to his comments about this, he's always deflecting blame, saying that he didn't pull the trigger. It's like, let's be real here. It's just like if you caused people to panic and storm out of a movie theater, people were being trampled, especially young children. You might say, well, all I did was yell out that there was a bomb or a shooter or a fire. I didn't actually trample anyone. No, but you did this. You set it in motion. You knocked the first domino down, which caused all the other dominoes to fall. You knew what you were doing.
And I think most of the blame lies on Barris. I will clarify that if anyone thinks that I'm putting all the blame on the police. No, I'm putting it all on Barris, but I think the police need to be more informed and need to ascertain a threat before using deadly force. Just thought that was the way they did things, but I've learned over the years that that's not how things actually work.
I go back to when Officer Rapp answered that question, have you ever heard of swatting before? And to me, I think, you know, if he's answering honestly, which I'll just take him at his word, he said he didn't hear of it before. Maybe, hopefully, the more this gets out there, the more people understand that it's a real possibility. Go into a hostage situation like it's a hostage situation. Get the right personnel on scene.
Like right off the bat, if you don't have a traced call back to the home, then maybe question it a little. Maybe try to make contact first.
If you have the supposed killer outside the house and you have all the guns on him, you are in control of the situation. And it's really surprising to me that there would be a person panicked to the point where they would pull the trigger like that. But again, I'm not in their shoes, but I just think you have everything under control. You have the supposed shooter outside their home, no gun in sight. you have them. Why can't they just move in on them? Yeah, again, maybe we're asking for too much here. But again, I think it's an education thing. And the more people that hear about this, maybe it'll cause incidents in the future to be handled better, hopefully.
Never miss an episode of Generation Y. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. After subscribing, please leave us a review. Our website is genypod.com. Visit to learn more about events and updates. Justin and I have other podcasts. Mine is Framed, an Investigative Story. Each season is a deep dive into a case that went wrong and why. Justin's other podcast is The Peripheral. His guests share personal stories most would consider taboo, but Justin doesn't judge. His podcast is a safe space for listeners and their stories.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.